Welcome to episode 12 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast, Southern California's number one sports podcast network, the only place of the show for every team here in Southern California and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? Yes, it is episode 12, attempt two, as we tried to record an episode before Thanksgiving, but I had a little bit of technical difficulties, so we didn't really have any sound afterwards, but we're trying it again. So here with me is my co-host over the phone, Kent Huskins. Kent, how you doing?
Hey, Anthony, doing well, thanks. Yeah, coming off a nice Thanksgiving. We were just chatting a little bit, but we had a nice Thanksgiving with Bree and the boys and her family and my family visiting from Canada. So, we had a great time. It was an eventful few days, and glad to hear you had a good trip as well.
Thank you very much. So on today's episode, we're going to go over the old Thanksgiving kind of mile marker for NHL teams and deciding whether or not we think the Ducks are playoff material at this point. But before we get to that, you can find us on all of the podcast directories. That's iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Luminary, and TuneIn. You can find us at Believe.com and at Believe Podcasts. And you can find us on our social accounts. Mine is at Deli Tweet. That's DELLITWEETS on Twitter. And Kent's is at Huskvarna. That's at HUSK_VERNA, correct?
That's right.
And that's on Instagram. So let's kick it off. Let's get into the whole prognosis of things. So at the Thanksgiving holiday, or now after at this point, the Ducks as of tonight are 3 points out of the last wild card spot and six out of third place in the Pacific with a game in hand of a couple of teams. So, Kent, what is your opinion on the Ducks so far? Are they still playoff material, borderline material, or you think they're going to miss out?
It's been an interesting season, I think, with the kind of tempered expectations leading into this season and then a phenomenal start. Things cooled off here over the past few weeks, and now we kind of the Ducks find themselves kind of where they're at towards the bottom, but I think it's not all that surprising given kind of what we thought might happen this year to see them kind of where they're at. But I think there's been plenty of signs of encouraging indicators that bode well for the future, but I think the one thing that's saving them at this point, and I think in the modern NHL, it's such a league that is basically so, I don't know, streaks are kind of the name of the game. And if you can get hot, you can go from last place in the league, such as last year with the St. Louis Blues, last place in the league in January, to winning the Stanley Cup. But I think that was, a little bit of a different situation. I think they had pretty big expectations at the start of last year and were kind of underachieving and still had a pretty stacked lineup that was kind of underperforming and had a first half where everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And then when kind of things clicked, then they just started kind of rolling and just kind of kept the momentum going. Whereas I think the Ducks have a lot more youth and inexperience and maybe not as much firepower as the Blues of last year. But I think it's just it's a different blueprint. It's a different phase, in the life of a franchise. It's just a totally different marker. So where they're at now, I think it's probably about where everyone expected, to be honest. I think the good signs is the way they played. I think even in a lot of the games that they've lost, they've at least, they've been competitive and if not outplayed the other team as far as the bulk of the play. Just when it comes to finishing and the score sheet, they're coming up short. Some games it's close. Some games it looks bad, a lot worse than it actually is. But I think on the whole, looking at the way they've played, I think like I said, the one saving grace might be just how much of a crapshoot it's going to be for once you kind of get past the top tier, maybe two or three teams in the West, where everything else is just going to be condensed. And I have a feeling it's going to be like that till the end of the season. So, I mean, if they can just kind of stay within range and not fall out too far, and hopefully they can kind of latch on to something and a nice win last game, and just find something to kind of some rallying cry or just something as far as game plan tactic wise that works for them and that group, and they can latch on to something for the second half and get hot. I mean, who knows? They're not that far out of it.
Yep. And you mentioned the tightness of the Western Conference right now between the final wild card spot and the last place in the Western Conference, which is the Los Angeles Kings. It's only separated by 7 points, and the Sharks are currently occupying that last spot in the wild card while the Kings are at the bottom, and they have the same amount of games played. So it is tightly packed, but I would say, I don't mean to pin you down, but we're at game 28 right now. We've got about 54 games, if my math is correct. In 54 games, you see the Ducks in or out of the playoffs?
I'm going to say yes. I think there's probably going to be about 3 to 5 teams battling. Just the nature and how much parity there is in the West, there's going to be 3 to 5 teams battling. Everyone's going to be beating everyone. But I'm going to say it, that the Ducks are going to grab the 8th spot. And that might be far-fetched, but I just think if you can go through what they've gone through, a stretch like that, and still only be 3 points out of a spot, they've shown their ability to play well lately. But if you can play that well over a long period of time, eventually pucks are going to go in. And I like the way they play. And once we get some key parts back in the lineup, and I think they'll be competitive right up till the end. I see them sneaking in right in the 8th spot.
What is the one thing they have to improve on the most, you think, to make that jump and to grab that last spot?
I mean, as far as the bulk of the play, I think special teams, most notably, I mean, the power play and but I don't know. I think if you play well that long enough, eventually pucks are just going to start going in. Just kind of play the percentages, play the numbers game, keep putting yourself in those good positions. I mean, I think we talked about it before. I mean, I'm not sold. I know it definitely can work out, but I don't know if it's a personnel issue. I feel like how this team's going to have success as far as the scoring standpoint. So just get a handful of guys up around 10, 15, maybe into the high teens, and just kind of get it done by committee. But obviously just kind of continue to work for those offensive chances. Eventually they're going to start going in. I got it.
There you go. So Kent, with the positive spin on things, and we did speak. Well, I think you have a point there. And going into what we spoke about kind of last episode that didn't get recorded, you're right. I think the one thing they're missing is that purebred goal scorer. I wrote an article about it in the Hockey Writers last week, and Eric Stevens just wrote an article in The Athletic kind of echoing the same thing. With the trouble they've had scoring goals, but the general increase of high danger or good chances that they've generated this year compared to last year, they still haven't been able to bury those chances. Silverberg and Raquel have been doing all right, but kind of hit dry streaks as of late, except for I think last game Silverberg scored. But they just don't have that player who can bury most of the chances they get, and with the trouble they've had on defense with injuries, they haven't been able to have that offensive efficiency that they need. But my prognosis isn't quite as positive. I don't think they're going to be in the playoffs by the time the season's over. Obviously, I have the easier job taking the field versus the Ducks, but I just think I maybe overestimated how powerful the how quickly the rookie class or the young class was of Terry, Steele, Jones, and Comtois was going to develop. I think I had maybe unfair expectations for their ability to contribute offensively, and without them contributing as much as I thought they would, I don't quite see them sneaking into the playoffs. And then Andrei Kasha, I thought if he was able to stay healthy, which he has more or less, except for that small timeout he had for, I believe it was a jar concussion. He hasn't been able to score quite as regularly as I thought he would. And with those injuries on defense, I just think the damage has already been done. I know they're 3 points out of a playoff spot, but it is as close as it is. They've got some very good teams to leapfrog. They've got Nashville, Calgary, Vancouver, all in front of them. San Jose, all of those teams are kind of in that general area, not to mention Chicago and LA behind them. Not that I think LA's really got the horses to play better this season, although I think Chicago might. But that's not to say it's a bad thing. I think the Ducks are developing well. I think, as we saw last night against the Kings, that they're clearly the better team and they're clearly on the way up, I think, faster than the Kings are. You didn't really see much from Los Angeles last night except for, I mean, they did have a good game. They had some offensive chances. Bohorkin played pretty well, but overall, I think the Ducks have the more solid core and foundation to grow going into the next few years. I just don't think it's quite going to be this year as a result of some bad luck and just the general lack of scoring punch. But heading into the Kings game that they won last night, 4-2, what were your impressions from that game? I definitely have a major one that I think we spoke of during the last episode that didn't get recorded either.
Oh man, I know you had some great stuff in that episode. What a sad thing! What a tragic sequence of events here. But yeah, that was a great point you had about the high danger scoring chances. That was a really interesting stat, and I think it translated or kind of encapsulated what. Kind of, I think all of us have felt like we've been watching so far this year. It's just, they seem to be playing well, and then you look up at the end of the night and it's a 6-2 loss or something like that. And so yeah, I think that was a really telling piece, bit of stat keeping and number analysis, and it was good stuff there last week.
Thank you. Thanks. I'm sorry it didn't get recorded either. That's all on me, but I do appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. The game last night, it's kind of one of those matchups where it never really matters where anyone is in the standings. It's always going to be an emotionally charged game. I saw there was a scrap in the stands there last night a little bit. When it kind of spills over like that, you know, the emotions are running high. And I thought it was a good game. I thought the Ducks came out, and you like to see them getting the quick start, getting out to a lead, and then obviously some pushback for the Kings, but to kind of fight through that and get a nice icing on the cake, an empty netter for Grant, another 2-goal night for him, and. Ducks, I guess, quote unquote, fourth line with another big performance to kind of continue on their incredible play this season. It's just awesome to see see those guys kind of keep chipping in like they have. I think it was a good win. I think it's a fair point on just kind of they're just at different points on the overall kind of development. Process Ducks maybe I would agree that their kind of youth is a little farther ahead, maybe having last year to play and have a good team and have some success and play together and get some experience in San Diego, and you just see, like, I think maybe the numbers aren't there, but I really like Troy Terry's game. I think he's he's going to be a key component moving forward. I think he's played well. I think the other guys have played well too. I mean, maybe expectations were a little high, and hopefully, I guess that's just the nature of being a fan. But yeah, as far as the game last night, great to see the guys kind of buckle down, come out strong, and then be able to hold on in the end. So, what were your thoughts?
I thought it was a good performance. Again, the Kings came on pretty strong, I think, in the later periods, but the Ducks were able to hold them off. That fourth line, as you said, quote unquote, has been really, I think, one of the strongest points for the Ducks all season. It's almost like they have the depth scoring, but they don't have the power up front scoring. So it's great to see Derek Grant get two more goals, Carter Rowney get a goal, and I think Grant's now got himself a nice little campaign by the Ducks Twitter community to get him voted into the All-Star game, so that would be pretty cool.
That would be awesome.
But yeah, I think overall that was it did go to show who is the better team in Southern California right now overall. Even though the Kings brought it, I think the Ducks generally kept it under control. And that got me to wondering, and I don't mean to put you on the spot again, but do you have any memories of a more intense or one of the more intense freeway face-off moments that you were involved in? I know back when you were with the Ducks, you guys were probably getting the best of them because, from experience, having watched a lot of Kings games in that era, it was not pretty.
Yeah. I think talk about a rebuild that they were kind of just starting that. During those years, and I remember, like Kopitar and Brown and all these guys coming in, and they definitely kind of put an emphasis on and getting those guys experience and sticking with them over a period of time, and then you saw the end result. So being there for, I think, first full year with the Ducks, I feel like we usually had the better of that series, but even year one to year two, you started seeing the progress, how those guys were coming along and improving. You could kind of catch glimpses of what was to come, and then the second year, I think we still probably again had the better of it, but you can start to see the process take shape and the vision and kind of what they were trying to do, and then to kind of parlay that year, getting a little better each year, and then before you know it, they were hoisting their own Stanley Cups and had built a bit of a mini dynasty there for a good chunk of a few years. So as far as individual games, not that I can remember. That's horrible. That's kind of the general synopsis. I feel like we probably had the better of the games those 2 years. But it was the beginning of what was to come for the game.
Got it. So off to another subject that isn't, well, it's a kind of tangentially Ducks related, but the last couple weeks, a lot has come out about the coaching community kind of in the NHL, specifically Mike Babcock and Bill Peters are the big names. Though the two of them have kind of had different controversies surrounding them. Obviously, Bill Peters, I believe, resigning as Calgary Flames head coach due to some allegations of racism, which he admitted to them, are certainly justifiably he should lose his job. But Babcock was a little bit of a different, sorry, my cats are fighting. Babcock was a little bit of a different animal in terms of players have alleged abuse that he mental and physical abuse of Babcock after he lost his job with Toronto, and things have kind of slowly trickled out. You played with him in Detroit. What was your general, hold on, let me, I gotta give me, all right, never mind. The fight is over. sorry. not to make light of a tough subject, but what was your general experience under Babcock when you played in Detroit?
Yeah, I mean, I guess kind of always wonder if it, you know, it's chime in on these things. But honestly, my experience, I say that there's maybe some hints and a little bit of crossover with what happened, but for the most part with me, I didn't have those exact experiences. And like I say, I'm fine to say kind of how it went down. As I actually signed so it was coming out of the lockout year, where we started playing right after New Year's, I believe. So we were living in Orange County, and I went to play on a PTO. I didn't play during the lockout. I was kind of rehabbing some injuries, and signed a PTO with the Ducks farm team in Norfolk, Virginia. So I went there to play for a couple games, just in hopes of getting a contract with Ducks or with anyone who was watching, because at that point teams were kind of everything was heightened and training camps were shortened, and I mean guys were getting hurt and teams were looking to fill out rosters and everything. It was a pretty intense couple weeks. So I mean, the stands, I played a Friday Saturday night game in Norfolk, and the stands, I mean, were full of scouts and after that weekend, my agent called me on Sunday and said, we've got an offer from Detroit. And I thought, Detroit, I mean, and it's funny, over the course of the first part of my career, with the Ducks and the Sharks, some of my best games were always against Detroit. Like I scored probably my most career goals against Detroit. Like, it's weird. So I ended up signing to go with Detroit, and I was excited to go be a part of the storied franchise. They still had Lidstrom just retired, but I mean, Zetterberg, Datsyuk, Franz, and all of those guys were still there. I still had a great team. So I was excited to go. So I fly there on a Sunday morning. Basically, it's one of those where you get your I land, and there's a car waiting to take me to the Joe. Basically, I get there a half an hour before the meeting starts. So, like, just basically travel and play the same day. They had a bunch of injuries coming out of lockout, so I got to play right away. Came in, played four or five games. Went pretty well, and like coaching staff started throwing me out in like a 5-on-3 penalty kill and like late in the game, that kind of thing. So I was personally kind of hopeful this was going to work out, but then once everyone got healthy, it was clear that I was going to be just kind of the odd man out. And so I was basically healthy scratch for a good chunk of games. And then when I would get in the lineup, I kind of felt like at times I was, I don't want to say singled out, but like at times during video, if there was a mistake that I made, there was a little more of a spotlight shone on it than perhaps if one of the other guys did it or whatever. But I didn't really think much of it at the time. And Mike was always really kind of affable and friendly, and would always kind of like talk to me. We talk about the Anaheim and like where he lived when he was here, where we lived kind of in the summers here. And like he was always super friendly with me. And then the playing side of it didn't work out, and definitely a lot of kind of being a veteran guy, getting healthy scratch for a good amount of games in a row. And but the one thing I'll say, when I got, I actually ended up asking for a trade, and they were able to move me to Philadelphia. Ken Hong is a great guy, and he just said, yeah, we'll try and move you to somewhere where you can have a better chance of getting in the lineup, so you can try and at least extend your career, that kind of thing. So I always appreciated that when I got traded. I remember Mike came into the locker room and said, you know, I appreciate everything you did, and thanks so much. You did a great job. I know it's not an easy role. I guess that was my experience. I mean, I can't say how he was with other guys. I mean, if some of these stories come out were true, that's pretty brutal, but I don't want to do anything other than give you what happened. And that was my experience with him.
Yeah, that's interesting. It is, obviously there are two sides to every story, and your experience sounded like a much more positive one. But it is interesting, the sharing the whole Anaheim history between you two. I wonder if that helped in terms of, because I was thinking about it, obviously the Babcock success during his short stint in Anaheim was not the only reason he continued to get, I imagine, NHL jobs and kind of broke into the NHL and coached Detroit, but I'm sure it's a significant reason considering just how successful they were and kind of how surprising that run in 2002, 2003 was. So it's interesting to me that he kind of, I mean, in a lot of ways started his NHL career in Anaheim and launched it there. So it's interesting to hear your experiences in Detroit. I thought that it would be good just hearing from somebody who played for them and played for him to kind of hear how it was. But let's get on to a more lighter subject now, our three stars of the game segment, what we tried to do last week, but once again, the technical difficulties didn't work out so well. So three favorite NHL jerseys, or just we'll say hockey jerseys. Well, go ahead. What are yours?
Yeah, so if I can remember correctly, it was the Quebec Nordiques. Is my I like the old school growing up in small town Canada. I always was a Montreal fan. I think I always kind of, that's always a classic kind of iconic hockey jersey. And then there was, I just decided that everyone else was like in Montreal, and that I was going to like the Nordiques, which was also just sort of like a kind of random, like where it was not going to win any design awards or anything, but it just ended up being, I don't know, so plain that it was cool. Like, and plus the Nordiques were always horrible, and I just like cheering for them, rooting for the underdog, and all that good stuff. So those are, I think those are my two kind of throwback jerseys. I'm trying to think of my third one from last week.
Oh man,
it was a good one too. What were your three?
Oh yeah. Yeah, mine were a common thread. Mine were all generally red jerseys. I'm a big fan of the classic jerseys, the timeless ones. The Detroit Red Wings, it's now the home jersey. It was the away jersey back in the day before the first the 05 lockout. I just like the red, the color of red, the big solid sleeves, and the font that the names are, the kind of digital font back there is pretty cool, even though it's an older jersey. And then the Blackhawks, obviously, with the red home jersey with the classic logo on the front. They haven't really had to change much through the years, and I think that's because it is really a timeless jersey. And then you'll notice the last part of the trend with the red, especially like red, white, and blue jerseys, except for the Montreal Canadiens jerseys. The Washington Capitals home jersey, I think, is great. I love the way it looks. It's kind of a much more modern take on their original jersey, which I wasn't a big fan of at the time, but now I like kind of the more solid red home jersey again. And then the honorable mention was the World Cup of Hockey in 1996 Team USA Nike jerseys. I've been looking for that on eBay ever since eBay's come into existence, but I remember loving those jerseys when I was in third grade or whatever it was during that World Cup of Hockey. They were very kind of unique.
That's right. Yeah, that was a great kind of obscure reference. Well, not obscure, but just kind of off the radar. And that was I forgot about those. And those are definitely sharp and three good picks, for sure. Nothing you can't go wrong with it, with either of those. And I remembered my third one was the original when the Kings, we're talking about the Kings the whole episode. I can't even remember this. But it was the throwback, the Kings jersey when Gretzky first got traded, and then they came out with those, the black and silver and switched over to that. And it was just kind of edgy and nothing like it, was out there in hockey. And it was just kind of, and I remember saying it, you started seeing it in like rap videos and growing up in rural Canada. I just thought that was so cool to see a hockey jersey in a rap video. And yeah, those jerseys, yeah, were just so like, so cool and so unlike anything that had been done up to that point. And it was cool, extra cool that it was LA too, just kind of such an iconic city in the U.S. And so that was my third one.
Absolutely. And I agree with you there. Something that I think I wasn't able to articulate on the last one as well, but I like that kind of the trend that LA teams had where they kind of mimicked each other, where obviously the Lakers had their kind of colors. And I believe it was the Lakers owner who first owned the Kings. They had them in similar colors with the yellow. And I'm probably getting Kings fans, feel free to crap on me all you want. I'm getting the official name of the colors wrong, but like the golden and kind of royal blue and yellow purplish combination that the Lakers and the Kings had. But then when the Kings switched to that black and silver, it was a lot like the Raiders, who were in LA at the time. So yeah. I kind of liked that the synergy between the different teams in the same city was pretty cool to me. So it's definitely a good choice.
Oh, nice. Good point. Good point. Very true.
But that's going to do it for episode 12 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast. We can tell you that there's probably going to be a couple of interviews coming up that you're going to be interested in hearing. One of them is confirmed for next week, but I don't want to spoil it just in case anything happens with our schedules. And then maybe some other ones coming up in the future. I've got one potentially scheduled if the players dad is correct in his in his saying that he's going to come on. But that'll do it for the episode. Like I said, you can find us on all the podcast directories. That's iTunes, Spotify, Luminary, TuneIn, and Google Play. You can find us on our social network accounts, and you can find Kent at his coffee shop. It's Huskins Coffee down in Santa Ana. So anything else you want to add for the night?
No, that's great. That's good for me.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week.